everyone. Welcome to the Charmed Life podcast. This podcast is all about magic, metaphysics, mysticism, and the unconditional love of the universe. And I am your host. My name is Tricia Carr. If you're new, welcome. And I would love it if you would like, subscribe, share, and comment. Share this with someone if you enjoy the content. And as well, check out the YouTube channel, because on YouTube, we have content that is unique to YouTube, content unique to the podcast. And we're doing a lot of fun things over there. And so with that, I want to tell you that you are a magician. I'm a magician. You're a magician. We are all magicians. Now, I am, in case you're new, I'm a metaphysical teacher. I'm a spiritual teacher. I'm a multidimensional medium, empathic channel, and I'm a hypnotherapist and also an animal telepath. And I am always talking about magic. This show is called Charmed Life because charm being magical, it is just the statement. It is the stamp that this particular work is about the birthright that we all live a magical life. And this episode is all about magic because I have on another magician, Sadhu Dah. Sadhu Dah is just a phenomenal light teacher and student, as we talk about, and practitioner of many different forms of magic and mysticism. He is the student of the Theravada lineage. He is trained in the inner door secrets of Thai Buddhist magic. He's a high priest in a Wiccan coven, and he has studied Norse magic under Jeffrey Duell, and he's also a master hypnotist. So we have so much to talk about. Now, I want to tell you that we jump right into it because, one, he's a spiritual teacher, and so he teaches all of many different ways to raise your consciousness and to raise your vibration. He teaches these magical practices, the many that he is trained in, but he also teaches how to he supports people and helps people heal if they are in a paranormal crisis. And to that end, he is an exorcist. Ooh. What I love about my conversation here with Sadhu is that we do not have any romanticism about what those fear-based perspectives are about what exorcism is or what it means to have some kind of energetic entity, some kind of attachment. And I feel like we both are very demystified of this process. But I jump right in at the beginning of this interview and I talk to him about what exorcism is and what the exorcism practice is. But I want to tell you right up front, this is not black magic. This is not dark magic. This is, in fact, white magic, and also very brave and very oriented, very housed in your spiritual sovereignty, that you are the light, that you raise your vibration or increase your chi and your relationship with your chi, as Sadhu speaks of it, then you are able to be a wonderfully robust, spiritual aligned being having the human experience. So as we head into this, it's a lot of fun, y'all. So check out this interview with Sadhu Dah, and I will talk to you on the other side. Well, Sadhu, welcome to the program. I'm really excited to connect with you on so many of these topics. First of all, I want to say that you are a really bright light, and I find it, and which is interesting, of course, because you clearly are working with the shadow, I think, and magic tends to work with the shadow as well as the light. And so I'm really excited to connect with you and have you on Charmed Life. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's dig into some of this stuff. Now, you are a teacher and you are an exorcist. So, of course, we have to talk about the exorcism first off. I looked it up on your website and I see it as a service. It says that you actually don't charge up front. You go and you investigate first. Is that correct? And if it's a true exorcism, then you would talk about rate afterwards. So tell me about exorcism and how you do it or what it is. And is this necessary? Because I know mostly we probably think it has to do with the Catholic Church, and that's not necessarily true. And probably not how you do it, right? You're not involved with the
not at all. Yeah, I'm not religious in that sense. And as for a small clarification, with the genuine exorcisms, I never charge for that. And it's kind of interesting because it is my most dangerous work.
Yeah.
But I believe that is something that should always be free. I recently had a case that came to me from a show that I did about a week ago, and it was like a mid-level incubus spirit. So beast classification of a lower demonic being. And I get a lot of people that will come to me and they don't necessarily realize they need an exorcism, because there's a lot of convolution in like, okay, you know, exorcism, we've seen Hollywood, you know, head spinning around kind of thing, levitating bodies. There is some element of that happening in extreme cases. But for the most part, what I deem necessary for an exorcism would be a person that has entered the second to third stage of a three-stage process. So you have infestation, then it bridges with manifestation into oppression, and then from oppression to transpossession into possession. So stage one, stage two, stage three. When a spirit is occupying a home, whether this be a non-human or human entity, oftentimes we'll simply break it down to the intent. Is it malicious in nature, or is it just trying to communicate? So not necessarily benevolent, but like, is it just curious? Is it trying to communicate in some way, or is it showing malicious intent? If it's showing malicious intent, then there's one of two things it's then naturally going to do, and that's going to be to either feed in a parasitic style through attachment, or it is going to also attach and then try to assume the mantle of possession. If it is going for either one of those, at a certain point, it's generated and made its presence known. It's occupied its energy within the space of the home and within the client as well, within their energy body. And then it is going to bridge that to a stronger foothold, where it can manifest its energies, it can do more pronounced phenomena. So going from loud bangs and knocks and breaking glasses and, you know, all these things that people would consider to be, whoa, that's a lot of phenomena. It's very base level phenomena. When I start to get worried when a client comes to me is, hey, so I'm getting scratches on my body, or, you know, my child is complaining of having these hellish nightmares of being burned in their sleep. Mm-hmm. And when they wake up, there's burn marks on their body. You know, these things that are now starting to either be auditory or visual hallucinations, or even like quasi-physical type of attacks that may fade away, but are physically observed, seen, and felt at first. That tells me there's already a bridging into transpossession. There's already an oppressive state happening. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that helps to answer any of those questions.
Sure. And so, I mean, yeah, you said a lot of fascinating stuff there. Now, I want to just get clear on something. Do you teach or do you, is it a part of your belief system that we have sovereignty? So, you know that a person actually technically doesn't have to call an exorcist. It's really about them empowering and being able to find their empowerment, because we actually have, I don't like the word supremacy, but it's essentially that we are always, we have free will. How about that? Mm-hmm. We have the universal law of free will, and whether by an unconscious or a conscious process, it's actually an invitation that is made to an entity or something that might be unwanted. Is that, can you speak to some of that? I know I said a lot of stuff and it's not a clear question, but I bet you've got some.
I would say yes and no. Okay. No, in the instance that sometimes, regardless of if we manifest it, we call to it or not, we may catch the attention of a specific entity. Mm-hmm. Think of this as in nature. Yeah. The stray antelope in the herd, is that antelope willfully calling or drawing the attention of a lion, or is the lion using opportunity?
Well, so, but we're talking about, and there is always as above, so below. So we can look at the physical presentation of something and see the spiritual parallel to it. In that case, that's an antelope that's physically ill, and that's the survival of the fittest. So is that, you see that as mirrored also in the energetic or spiritual realm as well? So if a person is spiritually compromised, how should maybe we'll say that, I don't like the word weak because that sounds pejorative, then that might be the reason you would catch the attention, or a person would be have the attention caught of a malevolent entity in spirit.
Yes, in combination as well with unwarranted or unwelcomed magical intent from another being. Mm-hmm. So let's say a person is competent. Let's say they do have a certain amount of development. Mm-hmm. They could still be open, you know, and this is more rare. I mean, it's kind of common with what I do, but in general public, it's kind of rare for a spiritual attack to happen from a magical sending aspect. It's more likely that it would come from a natural aspect, just mm-hmm. being in your own environment reflected within the spiritual realms. Mm-hmm. But I would say the main thing is people's energetic alignment. Yeah. Most people in general, when you kind of had mentioned, like, you know, compromised in a sense, most people are not spiritually healthy. Mm-hmm. And it sounds almost insulting to say that, but it's not, because how out of alignment are we with our chi, with the cultivation yeah. of our personal energy? Many people don't have spiritual practices that build that natural energy.
It's so true. And I like that you said it's because it seems insulting, because I also want to clarify, because I heard it as well. Like, someone could infer from what I said that it's our fault if we have. But listen, we have crap relationships. We get involved with narcissistic people or abusive people. That doesn't mean we're bad people, but that is like the gazelle and the cheetah, you know what I mean? In the herd, if we had that relationship with the chi boosted, then possibly we wouldn't attract or be attracted to a person who might not appreciate us, or we might have an imbalanced relationship. So I just always like to kind of, because, you know, it's probably your job as well as my job, that demystifying and decreepifying spirit, you know what I mean? Like, and it's not all light and bright when we're talking about spirit, and then it's, you know, and then only darkness or only difficulty is here on the physical plane. No, there is an energetic plane that is preceding all that is happening here physically. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify that. So talk about that relationship with the chi and the spiritual practices, because also, by the way, if you have a spiritual practice in relationship with your chi, you could still find yourself vulnerable, whether yes. to the human relationships that are taking advantage, or of spiritual relationships or victimhood.
I would say vibrations yeah. are of utmost importance. I don't really go by the concept of, you know, good and evil. Mm-hmm. I more so go by, is this something I want to be in alignment with?
Yeah.
Or if I'm working with a client, is this an alignment they want to hold? They're being oppressed, or they're being attacked by this entity, mm-hmm. then likely they don't want to be in vibratory alignment with that. So I need to elevate their energies. Yeah. I need to raise them out of that vibrational pull, separating that magnetic connection by taking them up a few levels. So yeah, you could say, like, oh, that's more leaning into the light, but really I just see it as growing beyond that vibrational pull. With developing those energies, though, the most important aspect we can adopt is learning how to purge trauma from our bodies, yeah. learning how to heal from those traumas, which is naturally going to elevate us to higher states. And I think that's where a lot of people will get caught up, is they'll have these spiritual practices. They may have a cultivation of chi. They may be able to feel, interact, and do things with this energy, but they still have a lot of trauma in the body. Mm-hmm. And that trauma still keeps them within certain limitations vibrationally.
I think what you started that with is actually what I was going for when I was saying spiritual sovereignty and all that kind of thing, is that we raise our vibration to be out of a magnetic alignment with, let's say, a negative entity or something like that. And I honestly, like, some of the really good exorcist movies, like The Conjuring, that's what they always do. They end up in those last critical moments. Not that that's reality, but that's actually based on real stories, The Conjuring mm-hmm. series. Is that they're usually at the end, they have the mom and she's the one who's possessed, and they're saying, fight, fight, Susan, you can fight this. And so they're demonstrating that it's actually raising your vibration to a different level so that it doesn't act, you actually aren't that gazelle that's, you know, compromised or whatever it is. And so that's, thank you for saying that. And so that's part of the work, is that you help, because you could go in there, and someone who does this work can go in there and just clear an entity. But if you're still a match for it, be back
it'll
tomorrow.
Come back.
Back tomorrow. All right.
I could still make it leave right away, but it'll still come back unless I'm able to change the setting and scenario that that person's in.
So how, okay, we're going to talk, I want to ask you about, I'm saying this out loud so I don't miss it. I want to talk about that, raising the vibration, raising the chi. And then I also want to talk about how common are attachments and all of this. My estimation is that if we kind of take a microscope to it, it's basically anytime we're out of alignment, there's some kind of manifestation that there is an energy that is helping us. Just like when our health is off, there could be a virus or a bacteria or something that is assisting that unwellness. Right? How common is some kind of attachment, some level of attachment? Or
it's very common. I would say more with individuals that you encounter every day. For example, you're at work, you're minding your own business, the boss comes to you and he's putting these expectations, these demands on you. He's putting this stress on you. You yourself are generating the cortisol in your body. The stress chemical is not being injected into you. It's being produced from your own adrenal response. Your body is creating this chemical by itself. However, there is an outside influence. Without that outside interaction, your body's likely not going to just start generating, cortisol. In that instance, yes, there is an influence being put on you. There is an energetic connection being made that then is giving that bacteria, right, that virus, the ability to grow. So that's one way of how common it is just the interactions we have with people every day that can be temporary type attachments, but it's more so just kind of being something put into your sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. With spiritual attachments, I'd say it's still pretty common, but most people aren't going to be as affected as they are with other people. Mm-hmm. That's going to be kind of more dominant in our day-to-day. But with the spiritual attachment, typically that tends to be more pronounced when it's taking place. Whether that be, you know, somebody that is a psychic vampire or somebody that has like magical influence being put on them, or it's entity related, there may be more noticeable physical effects and mental effects that are just kind of confusing and bewildering. Whereas interactions with people were like, okay, well, yeah, it makes sense that I have a headache right now because my girlfriend is just going off about the same thing for 20 minutes now and I'm just trying to relax. You know, you're aware that your mental energies are being taxed in that moment. Mm-hmm. And mine doesn't do that. She's actually a very wonderful human being.
In case she listens. That's not a life example.
She listens to these shows.
That's nice. So you were talking about the trauma in the body. And so I'm sure a lot of yours perked up about that. What are some rituals, techniques, processes? How do we purge trauma from the body? Is it something that we can get to a place of crystallization where there's so little trauma in the body? Speak on any of that wherever you like.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. One of my bread and butter. I swim in trauma. As terrible as that sounds, I bathe in it. It's kind of the center of my life and my work. I came from a very twisted childhood, a lot of gang violence, a lot of drug addiction. My mother was a prostitute and she was drug addicted. And so I grew up very young, just bombarded with some of the worst aspects of life and humanity. And it took a toll on me. And I was diagnosed with PTSD at a very young age. And I lived with that trauma for years. I was such an angry child. I was so hateful. And I didn't even really have a direction of the hate other than the world. Just hated everybody and I hated everything. And it took me a lot of learning. It took me a lot of healing to become the Sadhu Da that people know today. And it was very small steps that turned into big steps, that turned into me running, that turned into me flying, you know? And the way we achieve that is by, one, addressing that we're not okay, every one of us.
Yeah.
And that's a tough pill for many people to swallow, is to be able to say, I'm not okay. But once you're able to identify honestly with yourself that you're not okay, then you can start putting in the work. And that is okay. I use a lot of like self-hypnosis when I'm working with clients. I do like regression trauma work and et cetera. And it's something that I can do at a very accelerated pace, whereas a client kind of approaching it themselves, it might be more work. I teach some of David Snyder's techniques like neurogenic reprocessing. Basically, we want to, there's three different ways. So without making this too big of a subject broach, one, rewriting the neurology by connecting with the subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. Using the metaphor of like color and shape and texture and identifying on our body where we physically feel something and exploring that feeling. And then with our mind connecting consciously to the subconscious, we create that metaphor, which gives us that bridge. And then it doesn't matter if we're aware that we're manipulating our own neurology, because it's going to work.
Right.
Subconscious is just going to take input commands all day long. And that's the beauty of it, and also the horror of it, is we may not be aware that we are just constantly encoding negative things into our body, and it just, the body just accepts it. Mm-hmm. But the same can be true in reverse. We could put good things into the body and the body will just accept it. And if there's too much bad, well, no wonder this little bit of good here and there that you're putting in isn't being accepted as a command, because you have so much negative. But if you continually chip away at it, then the good will become dominant. And I use those terms, you know, loosely. But yeah, so we want to use our own subconscious mind and our neurology as a tool for rewriting. So using self-hypnosis, and this can also work with like EFT, you know, emotional freedom techniques and stuff like that. These are things you can learn on an energy level. That's another way that I approach it. And that is, I will just straight wire myself with my chi fingers into somebody's body and just start pulling things out. And I'll do my whole process. And I don't really need any interaction from them other than just being present. Mm-hmm. That's a little more complicated, because trying to explain a lot of that is something we don't necessarily have time for. But a short explanation of that would be having breath control and being able to focus into these Mushin-like mind states of like no mind, being fully present, but also experiencing nothingness at the same time, or entering states of samadhi, higher states of consciousness. When we get into those kind of places, then you're doing true magic, in a sense. And we only call it magic because we don't really understand the sciences behind it, but we actually do if you wanted to get into Vedic and advanced Buddhist, spiritual sciences. But the Western mind kind of sees it all as esoteric woohoo. The third thing I would say would be a combination of the two, blended together and kind of put into practice in the most idealized way. So we're kind of blending Western and Eastern techniques and really utilizing all of the tools and skills. There's several things I could teach, but I guess it would depend on what would you specifically want to know as far as a simple approach, like anxiety, or, I mean, what are we talking here?
The Enlightened Entrepreneur, an 8-week live online program to launch and scale your spiritual business. This program begins July 22nd, 2021. It's one thing to know you are a healer or an intuitive, a coach, an energy worker, but quite another to figure out how you can take your talents and create a successful business out of them. We need to know how to set up our life to support our work and how to attract clients and build a brand, how to conduct our sessions with integrity, and how to shine our light even brighter so more people can find us and book with us. Enter The Enlightened Entrepreneur, a live online 8-week course specifically designed to teach heart-led practitioners how to launch, establish, and scale their own highly successful spiritual businesses. The Enlightened Entrepreneur is taught by Crystal Ann Compton and me, Trisha Carr. Crystal and I bring you our years of experience as successful independent entrepreneurs in the spiritual space, and we alchemize this with cutting-edge, groundbreaking technology designed for heart-based entrepreneurs. If you know you have a mission to help and serve, if you want to do what you love and love what you do, and if you believe that spiritual entrepreneurs are not meant to suffer under the weight of professional struggle, then register now. We begin July 22nd. Scale up or start your spiritual business with The Enlightened Entrepreneur.
I mean, I think that's all fantastic. I think it's what you, those, the three different approaches, I think it's really well stated. Anxiety, if you want to speak on that, because I think anxiety even more than depression is more on people, even though they're two sides of the same thought form, that anxiety seems to be more present. That probably has a lot to do with our current fourth dimensional ecosystem right now, all the stimulation, all the fear mongering, and what the subconscious is being fed by the collective outside. So anxiety, yeah, I think that's a big one, isn't it? Is that something that you get a lot of, you need to support a lot of people on?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I shouldn't be smiling as wide as I am when you're sitting there talking okay. about that. Yeah, no, like I said, I swim in this stuff. You mentioned at the very beginning of the show, like, you know, familiar with shadow, working with shadow. It's like, it never sounds pretty when you say it, but, and there's really no other way to say it, but I love like trauma and all the just defunct emotional states and all the nasty, gritty emotions and feelings, because I just dive into them with pure love and acceptance yeah. and joy, and I share and shine my light in it. And it's something that so many people kind of want to shy away from, or they want to project the light onto, but I just dive straight into it and let my light shine outwards mm-hmm. and illuminate all of that darkness. And I think that a really simple technique we could employ here for some of your listeners that is a perfect combination of the Eastern and Western approach. We're using our imagination and we're also engaging energy, and we're hacking the neurology by using this technique that I've kind of modified and I heard about a while back and I thought it was like really brilliant. Energy candles. I'm sure maybe some people listening right now are familiar with that. So we'll kind of focus in our mind. We'll close our eyes. Try to allow ourselves to relax. It's okay if you can't. Doesn't really matter. This is going to work anyway. So you're going to sit there and you're going to say out loud with your eyes closed and trying to focus, anxiety, 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 anxiety. And you're just going to kind of put yourself in a broken mental loop intentionally and say that 21 times. And then at the end of that, you're going to snap your fingers. This is sending it 2 to 3 levels down subconsciously. So now we're instantly triggering the anxiety response in our body. Now, what this does, even though you're either increasing your anxiety attack in that moment, like to a higher degree, or inducing an anxiety attack, it's actually brilliant because we are bringing that program forward so that we can start rewriting the coding. So as soon as you start getting that uncomfortable feeling, as soon as it's forward in the mind, you're going to immediately picture it as a candle. And if it takes shape as multiple candles or a whole room of candles just lit up, see all these candles or see this single candle in your mind, and then simply take your middle finger and put it right in between your eyebrows, so to your third eye, and we're going to push in with pressure on that spot. And we are simply going to think of our favorite color, and we are going to imagine ourselves taking in a breath, filling our whole body with our favorite color. And then as we exhale, we are blowing out those candles of anxiety with that favorite color. And if you need to repeat this process, multiple times till you get all the candles, that's fine. But notice, as you're doing this, you're starting to feel calmer. Yeah. Notice the sensations of relaxation in your body. Realize you are yourself doing this. You are manipulating your own neurology. You are energetically imprinting inside of your own self. You yourself are taking the role of creator, and it's beautiful. You're healing yourself from within. What's not to love about that?
That's an awesome technique. Have you studied neurolinguistic programming?
Oh, yes.
Okay, because I'm like, that's an NLP changing the submodality, but really the beautiful spiritual energy. I teach on holy flames and crystalline elements, which crystalline elements is, I don't know if other people use that term, but essentially you're using, in the way that, you know, I'm downloading and teaching that, is using the holy element of air, as well as obviously the holy element of fire, to burn through the psychic spiritual debris. That's really cool. But you know what else in the beginning I noticed there? When you're talking about anxiety, this is sort of a technique. It's like when Jesus said, tell me your name, demon. It's like you have to call the demon by its name so that it no longer has an insidious kind of power over you. And you know, by doing that, like you said, it could induce an anxiety event. But in fact, you are inducing yourself. So the way that you break a state, and I know you know this, I'm saying it for other people, the way you break a state that seems to be holding you, a mental state, is to go deeper than the state and then basically have mastery over it and then bring yourself all the way up out of it. And then, of course, you
have to be uncomfortable.
Exactly. Because sometimes you are bringing that in, and that's okay. You have to go through it. The way out is through, you know. But and then in the end there, and well, not in the end, but basically you're also activating the parasympathetic nervous system with the intentional conscious breathing. So
it's love you. You're amazing. Yes.
I love you.
Yes.
I was like, that was such a robust and thorough and full and beautiful. The imagery is beautiful. And I love all of it. So that's fantastic. Thank you for that. I love it.
I appreciate that you could lock on to several things happening there, because a lot of times when I'll explain a technique to somebody who may not necessarily have an educational background within the modalities of what I'm teaching, which is no shame on them or putting down them in any way, but they don't really see the genius behind what I'm doing. They don't see like just how really amazing it is, especially some of these techniques that I modify and create on my own. I'm like, man, if you could just realize everything that's happening right here.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, you're an eternal student. And so I can tell, and you are significantly younger than me. So it's a kind of amazing how much you have exposed yourself to and the time. And well, when you say like you modify it yourself, this is what I think is really happening, is that while there are a lot of ancient observational and spiritual technologies that are woven in that are existing or pre-existing, what you are actually doing is recalling your own modality, possibly from your soul history. So it's say past lives or something like that. You know what I mean? Like it's actually you recalling it, and all of those tools are out there. But you know what I mean? Like if you build a house, you're going to use a screwdriver and a hammer. That doesn't mean that you aren't the architect. You still are. So
right.
That's pretty cool. Hey, can we talk about one of the things you mentioned before we started? You wanted to talk about paranormal crisis and psychic self-defense. Now, I think it might be a good way to segue into this, because we're talking about all of that empowerment and how to shift and change it with the body, the neurology, and the energetics. So speak on some of that for me, will you? The paranormal crisis. Are we in a paranormal crisis, or is that something you mean as an individual?
That would be an individually affected situation. Okay. For example, when you have a person that is experiencing phenomena in the home, mm-hmm. and it is progressed to the point where it's undeniable. You know, there is paranormal activity occurring in your house, and you're definitely being negatively affected by it in your quality of life. And it's becoming more than just a nuisance, and it's actually boiling over into very dangerous elements of affecting your physical and mental well-being, potentially to the point of actually ending your physical life. Mm-hmm. That is paranormal crisis to me.
Yeah.
Where I charge with people is if you've got a ghost in your home, or, you know, your uncle's hanging around and, you know, this is kind of questionable and you may not feel too comfortable, or like you just want some of this activity to stop, but your life's not in danger. I'm going to charge for that, because it's not really that I don't care about it. It's not that it's not important to me, mm-hmm. but your life's not in danger.
Right.
When you reach the threshold of your life actually being in danger, that's when I'm like, okay, we need to form a battle plan, and we need to get in and we need to handle this right now, because mm-hmm. I do not want something to happen to you. You're in over your head. You have no idea what you're really facing and dealing with. And I am an expert in this field, and this is what I do best. I am a really good teacher. I am a really good student, but of one of the things I am most proud about and have worked so hard to be proficient in is taking a situation that many people would run from, that I myself will still have fear in my own body when I face, and mm-hmm. I will meet it head on, as a battle mage should. Paranormal crisis situation, bring it on. Like, I'm here to help you out. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of my biggest services to humanity. As far as specific questions about it, like, I would need something a little more probing so I can give
that's
you the
cool.
best
no,
answer.
That's no, I think that was, maybe we'll cover if you're able to, because I don't know if it's private to actually talk about a situation that you've encountered, where, yeah, obviously, well, I mean, hey, that's what people are thinking, right?
Well, I've had quite a few. I guess we could talk about either a situation that had happened to me personally, or one that I worked on with a client.
Whichever is most appropriate. Yeah, absolutely. And it's sometimes it's hard because it's kind of hard to tell someone else's story. But other times we have permission, or, you know, we can obscure the identity well enough.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's up to you. Yeah.
So I've had hundreds of cases.
If it's your own, and that's fine too.
I guess one of the more interesting ones that I have had was this client who, you know, she doesn't mind me talking about her specific case, but I'll still give her the courtesy of anonymity, even though hers has been publicly put out there by her own volition. Mm-hmm. This individual had reached out to me and one of my masters, and this was like early on in some of my training, and I had reached like a proficient point where I was able to do a lot of things on my own, to a certain level. And then I would sometimes need help if it was something a little more dangerous. Well, this was something within my capability, but it was so bizarre, the level of phenomena. This lady, it turns out, was being induced with ghost sickness. So there was a multitude of spirits that were feeding on her and exasperating a neurological condition that she already had, that would induce physical pain in her body. So it was just kind of compounding it, and then would make it easier for them to feed. And so it was just this repetitious cycle. And we had to teach her a lot of different techniques, and we had to go out there numerous times, but we've gotten it to be pretty manageable. Some of the interesting phenomena that was witnessed when we were there was, one, we had a sneaking suspicion that there is a certain level of magical involvement on this case, mm-hmm. not directed at her, but the paranormal phenomena in that little area of neighborhood that she lived in was too high of a degree to just be naturally present. Mm. We ended up finding out that there was a graveyard, I'd say maybe a couple blocks down the street from her, kind of like located in this little forested area. And there was a grave that had black candle wax dripped around it and burned crow feathers. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, yeah. This makes more sense.
Yeah, something.
So we did a cleansing there. We did some work on that. We kind of reversed the ritual working. That ended up playing into something else that became more casework for us, where we were kind of dealing with a necromantic cult that was involved in our city. Interesting stuff. Fun times. Led to some dangerous encounters with other mages. Wild things. A whole nother story. But anyways, we took care of that. And then she was still being affected. And that's when we started to figure out, like, okay, so this lady is a natural medium and psychic. And not only did we have the element of dealing with the magical phenomena that was being induced, but also she had objects that were essentially ritual objects she didn't even realize. They became charged from like a wraith type entity, so the corrupted essence of a human, if they don't cross over and they become their pain and suffering and death, they become non-human at that point. They almost have a quote-unquote demonic approach, a very malicious intent. They can't be reasoned with. They just are pure suffering energetically, just this lower vibrational entity. That happened to, believe it was, I couldn't remember what family member it was, but it was one of our family members who had passed, and they had to have an estate sale. And when they went over there and went through some of the belongings, there were some things they took. This family member was, to put it lightly, a very malicious person in life. They harmed people in very degrading and horrible ways. And this was something that was kind of like known by the family, but not necessarily like publicly made aware. So in death, this person was kind of like, oh yeah, so-and-so was a good human being. And it was like, no, they actually did really disturbing things to some of the younger family members. Anyways, so the essence of like this person's soul and their energy was imbued in some of these objects and then was brought home, where it was just compounded on top of her situation already. And we had to cleanse and strip the energy from those objects. One of the objects we actually had to destroy because it was just tainted in a sense. And then we also had to cleanse the home, and we had to empower her energies. We had to strengthen her weakened immune system, and then also her weakened spiritual immune system. And there was just all these different elements that just were not normal. Like one of the times we came out there, she did not have a demonic, haunting, but that ended up being drawn to her at one point. And I went in this dark closet and shut the door, and there was hot breath on me. And the hair on my neck was standing up. And this thing was growling. You could physically hear it. And I had some audio recordings where you can hear a guttural growling. And this thing was just right there. You know, physically you couldn't see it, but it was undeniable that there was something in front of you. And it was something very disturbing and very scary. And I just locked myself in the closet with it. And I was like, you're going to leave, and I'm not coming out of this closet until you're gone, and you're stuck in here with me. I'm not stuck in here with you. and so I did a mantra saturation. So and I did that for a repetition of 108. So like a full count with my mala. And I just kind of put myself in this heightened ecstatic state of samadhi, where I was essentially kind of like not here, but everywhere kind of thing, yeah. Consciously. not dividing my energies, but in a sense, expanding my awareness. And in doing that, able to encompass the dark spots of my awareness and bring those in alignment with my higher energies. So a little bit of a complicated way of explaining that I lifted the vibrations of the home and ejected that thing out. And thankfully, out of the numerous visits we had to this place, that thing never came back. So we were successful and able to eject the worst thing that ended up getting attention of this individual that we were helping. I had so many very, very fascinating photos that she shared with us. And, you know, this is just undeniable, like this glowing blue ball, not even an orb, but like almost the silhouette of a person trying to form. Like you could kind of see a hand sticking out like a little bit, but like it's mostly like a mass of a ball. And it was just like an iridescent blue and like kind of see-through, but you could see the shape of a hand coming out of this ball. There was so many other really cool things that happened. I had like dropped my car keys one of the first times we went over there. And as soon as I dropped my car keys on the floor, I went to reach for them and I heard like a little thud, and my car keys were like a good over 10 feet away next to the door on the floor. And then you could hear a childlike laugh. And I was like, yeah, this is some haunted stuff. So, you know, there's just like, I've gotten to a point where the phenomena does not faze me anymore. And that was something that was taught to me early on. I would go with one of my masters to these cases as he was training me. And I'd be like, did you see that? Did you hear that? Oh my God, look at what's happening. That's levitating. And he'd just look at it very dismissive and he'd be like, don't give it any attention. And
yes. That's so,
I thought he was jaded at first, but he was actually teaching me a very valuable lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what I was saying when, you know, like to decreepify the phenomenon, I think is so important because here's the thing, there is phenomena existing even if you aren't observing it. So it's existing in your life, it's existing in your relationships, existing in your thoughts and your emotional body. And if you happen to have the, quite honestly, fortune of it manifesting close enough to the light spectrum that you perceive it, then that's a good thing. Or in the actual light spectrum, in the material reality, it's a good thing, because then you get to actually look it in the eye and raise your vibration above it, and it's not as insidious or hidden. So, you know, it's, I think that that's just so amazing. Like I was telling some of my students not too long ago, I was having like a disturbed night of sleep and my vibration was pretty low, and I got up to go to the bathroom and there was something horrible in the hallway. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you know what I mean? Like that was my attitude. And I was like, okay. But I instantly, like, I know it's me. Like, you know what I mean? I just raised my vibration. I was like, oh, thank you actually for showing me what I was being, you know, it was about my being. So I think that's really cool. I love that your masters are just like, don't give it any attention. It's a child throwing a tantrum.
Pretty much, you know, and I've learned some very interesting techniques. So there's some stuff you can do with mantra that I'd always thought of it as just like reciting mantra. And then, my master Thanaful, he had taught me, he's a Thai bhikkhu, so a Theravada Buddhist monk. And he taught me how to use this. It's what's called the tatsa, which is like a spirit punch. And it's using like, you know, the bij, you know, like the root syllable, of this, like this energy that takes tonal form and shaping it into a very specific way, so that even though you're saying this mantra, you're directing the energy into like an energetic fist to just completely just knock a spirit out. Like basically like you are actually punching it in the face, like boom, it, Mike Tyson, you know.
It sounds like in Kill Bill, the five finger heart exploding technique.
Yeah, but like with your mantra,
spiritual hand, yeah.
Boom, you know, and like it's so fascinating because I've learned how to do so much with energy. And at the same time, you know, I'll see like some of my masters do things that just blow my mind and make me feel like an infant. And then in that same notion of me eternally feeling like an infant, like I'll show something very simple and very basic to, a student, and they'll just be completely mind blown by it. And I'm like, it's really not that impressive. You know, like, this is a really simple, very elementary thing. And they're just so mind blown by it. But then like, I realize like, how often am I having that reaction with some of my masters? And they're just like, really, this is like not even grade school. This is kindergarten. And so it's funny because I'm in this constant limbo of where like, I feel like a baby, but I also feel like an old man. And I feel like I'm just an old man baby.
Well, that's a great cycle to be in. Again, as an eternal student, it's to always be able to have surprise. That's the way that's a good life, I think.
Oh, I tell all my students, if you ever, feel like you have learned everything you need to learn, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you're probably real dumb in that moment.
Because I am constantly learning. I am just very dedicated to always being a student, no matter how proficient as a teacher I may be within a specific, field or subject. I will always continue to learn and study in that field or subject, and I'll never consider myself to have mastered it, because how could I possibly? I mean, information's only dead anyway. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's a thought form that's already been created. It's not in its, it, yeah, it's a really, yeah, it's just a thought form or a talisman that we can draw inspiration from if we want. Yeah,
exactly.
This has been so fun. I'm trying to think. You've given us already an amazing technique. So let's wrap it up by talking about, do you use, is there any kind of favorite magical ritual that you use personally that you at this time, I don't like this phrase that much, but couldn't live without, you know what I mean? Like something that's really essential, integral, anything at all you'd like to share that is important for your practice and, up-leveling, continued up-leveling.
I do have a very specific thing, but it's not something that a lot of people would have access to. I have one of my masters, Master Thanaful, had given me this Naga eye that he had been gifted from his master, Lung Por Kak. And it, I mean, this is going to sound really weird, but yeah, I mean, it's an honest answer to an honest question. So Lung Por Kak had gone along the Mekong River in Thailand to a very specific Wat temple. And this temple was in a cave, and it was dedicated to a Naga, half serpent, half human being. This Naga was the Lung Por, the senior, most venerable, holy monk of this temple. But a Naga is not human. A Naga is like a centaur, right? Mm-hmm. Half horse, half, man. So half serpent,
some kind of,
half
some man. Kind of cryptid. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And this is, the master of this temple. This is sounding very strange to a lot of people, I'm sure, but he blessed, he vomited this Naga eye, so this pearl, and gave it to Lung Por Kak. Lung Por Kak held on to it for many years, and Lung Por Kak gave it to his student, his disciple, Thanaful, Master Thanaful, and Master Thanaful had it for 20 years before he gave it to me.
Wow.
So this thing is not only of divine and holy origin, but it is just imbued with, more divine and holy energy. And a practice that I, quote unquote, can't live without is I stick that Naga pearl in my mouth every day, every morning. that I get a lot of benefit from doing that.
Yeah.
Without understanding the backstory of why I just stick this little black pearl into my mouth every day, it could just sound a little bit weird. But it sounds, I realize it sounds even weirder when I explain the story of why this pearl is important.
Hey, I talk about how you can spiritually connect with Sasquatch, so they're used to it.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But I love that you're talking basically about a talisman. You were talking about it in the story with the client with all of those ancestral artifacts that had negative energy from the predecessor. And this ring that I have, this is my wedding ring, and my husband picked out this stone. It's an old stone to avoid any conflict, you know, so it's conflict-free, but also because it was really pretty. And it's from like, oh gosh, I forget what it's called. It's called a European. So it's really, really old. Well, the first thing that I did was I cleansed it. So I was like, I don't know who's been with this, but it's been around hundreds of years and it's been in this cut and this shape for a long time, meaning it's been worn on people's bodies and on their person. Mm-hmm. So I set that, I recharged it, or I reset the charge of it and, you know, welcomed it into my life now. And exciting, and thinking, you know, it's gonna move on to someone else after that, but it's kind of, you know, it's a talisman basically. So, and I do have to give it a rest. I take this off at least once per day because it's very sensitive and it soaks up a lot. So yes. I get it. I mean, it's not really that weird if you think about it. We have jewelry that, and we have crystals, and but it has a specific to be put into the mouth. You know, there's a reason for it. And so I think it makes a lot of sense, actually. I don't think it's too weird at all.
there's various different reasons for why I do that. But yeah, it's a process of mine that I do every day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I also do like, you know, breath work, and I do qigong and gong fu. Mm-hmm. And I have like my various processes of moving my body, awakening my energies, my meditative practices. But you know, I feel like at a certain point when you get into all of this spiritual stuff, as we say, you kind of just develop your own rituals and processes like we do mm-hmm. without the spiritual. I mean, you wake up and you brush your teeth, right? That's a ritual.
Yeah.
That's a process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so giving yourself permission to prioritize your spiritual processes, that's sometimes where we have to, and not only where we start, if you've like had an awakening or you need to have an awakening, but we're even in a lifelong deeper practice of service and everything like we do, you know, you have to, we continue to do that, you know, plateau, and then we need to give permission for something else that's ritualized to come into the life and become crystallized into the energy. So tell people, again, as we wrap up, but I want to make sure that we cover the kinds of services, how people can connect with you, what kind of work they can that you offer. You're a teacher, so are there classes? Tell about all of your offerings and ways people can connect with your work.
So one, you would go to www.thesadhuda.com, and that's thesadhuda.com. Mm-hmm. I teach various different schools of magic. I became proficient in a lot of different path workings, and so I can teach inner door Buddhist magic techniques of the Theravada lineage as well as the Bonpo Tibetan lineage. I can also teach people a little bit about Mahayana magic, which is another pathworking of Buddhism. Buddhism magic is like something I've kind of devoted the most time and energy into. I'm also a high priest in a Wicca coven. I can teach you Wiccan magic as well. I can teach you Norse rune magic, studied under Jeffrey Duell, incredible human being. We can get super weird with runes. So I teach magic to varying degrees. Mm-hmm. Don't come to me for black magic, though, because you're going to be disappointed. You're not going to get that from me.
Yeah.
I also do amulets and talismans, like custom making them, as well as teaching how to make them as well.
Cool.
I do spiritual services of like inner self development, helping people heal, offering energy healing services, hypnosis work, trauma regression. I mean, if you go and you look at my website, you can see all of the services I provide. But I also do spirit-bound objects, and I do that in a very respectful and like I had a contract drawn up with the spirit. I'm not just putting a spirit into an object and, mm-hmm. you know, selling it. So that, you know, there's a mutually beneficial arrangement between doing that. I have spirit bound vessels and also teaching people how to summon spirits and work with them. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that I can teach and help with.
One-on-one groups, both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Workshops, events. Basically reach out to me mm-hmm. and ask me any of your questions. Check out my blog, see some of the other podcasts I've done. Just use me as a resource. Even if you don't want to pay for my services, I do a lot of stuff for free. I give a lot of things out for free. So you just got to check in.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, that's really exciting. So if you would like to work in white magic in some way, then you can work with Sadhu mm-hmm. or light magic. It's funny to me. It's obviously shadow, dark, gray, black, whatever you call it. Magic is just harming the self. And so that's the reason why we don't work in it, because harming another is harming the self. So, this has been so wonderful and I've had the best time with you. So thank you so much for coming on, everyone. All of the links are in the description and I hope you'll come on again sometime.
I would love to.
Awesome. Well, that was so fun. I hope you enjoyed it too. Check out his work because he's very interesting, very charismatic, very wise. And I definitely want to have him back on some other time. I loved what he was talking about there at the end with being able to, you can work with him to get a talisman that is programmed for you and also learn how to do that. That is actually really beautiful, magical work. Any kind of magical ritualized practice that, and if you can bring it into the physical, the material world through some material object or through your own materialization process, be it your body or your voice, then it is a very powerful, highly magical way to manifest. If you're wondering, you know, if you've ever wondered, like, why can't I manifest as easily, as quickly, as demonstratively as I want? Well, I just want to suggest that perhaps some ritualized, ceremonial, magical practices that are ancient, obviously all of white, light, unity, holistic magic, that might be the component, because it is a spiritual technology that is both ancient, and so it's been working with the human race for a long time. And it's also always new and renewed every time that we work with it. Now, the reason that I suggest it, like I said, it's ancient, is because our physical bodies actually evolve very slowly. An example of that is that we have an appendix, and we haven't needed an appendix for a long time. You know, like we have not needed it, but our body still creates it in the human beings. And just that the material reality, there is such a seasonal lag between the spiritual, the mental, emotional, the energetic reality, and the physical reality. And so if we're feeling a disparity there, it could be because that material reality, the physical body and everything else, which that's just an example of how slowly that evolves, that we may need to work with something that is more ancestral, more ancient, and bridge that gap with the ancient and connect it to the renewed and the now and the present and the renewing process. So all of these, the many different magical paths that Sadhu was talking about, and I really love high magic, ceremonial magic, Western magic, and the mysticism that often is more Western, but I love the Eastern mysticisms as well. These might be able to, and the rituals might be the piece that will help you. So if you have a session with Sadhu or go to a class with Sadhu, I also have had on the podcast Damien Eccles, who teaches ceremonial magic. I just want to invite you to look into that, because it could be that ritualizing that is missing, as opposed to the rituals that we all have now, being on the phone and looking at Instagram and all the things that is taking our attention as well as our physical activity. let's start to infuse it with something more intentional and actually something material that will help us to focus on the manifestation and the materialization of the reality that we're here to experience. Well, I had the best time with Sadhu. I'm having the best time with you. And so once again, if you want to follow me on Instagram, that's at Trisha Carr Charm, posting a lot of different stuff there. The YouTube channel, you can find that by just searching my name, but it's youtube.com/Trisha Carr. All of the links of everything are in the description. And thanks for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are. Hey guys, it's Trisha Carr. I have new exciting things going on with my Mystic Arts Academy. You can now subscribe to receive all of the live monthly content for about a third of the investment of a single class. Included are at least one downloadable guided meditation per month, two live events ranging from classes, channeled messages, group readings, intuitive development guidance, Q&A sessions, and tons of community. You'll also have access to a private Facebook community for fellowship and support, and this space is kept super sacred and high vibrational. Your subscription gives you access to the whole library of classes and live events, which are on a vast array of topics. All events are offered online by Zoom video call. Subscribing to the Mystic Arts Academy is also a way for you to support the Charmed Life podcast and engage on a deeper level. I'm offering the subscription at a super low rate of $22 a month. Joining now locks in this rate for as long as you're subscribed. Click on the description of this episode or go to my website, trishacarcharm.com, and click on Mystic Arts Academy. I look forward to connecting.